Hey everyone, Chat Cemetery is back, as is Drew Koenig. We are talking all about the Dead Zone TV series from 2002. It ran until 2007. I think, you know, going forward, I'm definitely splitting up TV shows by season to make my life easier for the most part, with a few exceptions. But Drew, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm actually really excited to talk about this because I love this show, actually.
I can't say I loved it. I thought a lot of it was mostly fine.
Right.
But then again, I watched all 80 episodes in 2 weeks, so it was a lot to take in.
Right, right. I feel like the main thing to consider with, like, this adaptation of the Dead Zone is it's not really the Dead Zone because it takes some definite creative license with the source material. And once you get past that, I think it's actually a very... And this is a weird thing to say about, something that comes from, like, a much darker source material, is actually quite fun. And is actually something very enjoyable and entertaining to get through, I thought.
One of the decisions they made that surprised me the most was that they held off until the end of season one to introduce Greg Stilson. And then his storyline ran through the rest of the show. Because when you start this, you watch the first two episodes and those closely follow the way the movie adaptation went, minus the Stilson storyline. You have, you know, the serial killer cop and that whole storyline, and they kick season one off with that. So you think you're going to get that Stilson stuff sooner than you do, but they make a choice to hold off on it and instead develop the characters more first before introducing him into the story.
Yeah, and they use the Dead Zone as, like, an opportunity to just tell, like, very, like, grounded in human stories using, like, a psychic ability, which I think works for, like, this incarnation and definitely, like, the way they're trying to tell this story. But it's weird, like, whenever we go back to Stilson, it's like, I don't even remotely care, which is, like, the strangest thing to do or to feel about this is, like, Dead Zone properties. Like, I don't care about, like, the actual thing that you're trying to do. The more, like, Johnny gets himself into trouble with, like, a vision, it's like, that's a much more entertaining show to me, you know?
Yeah, I quickly want to dive into the cast because you obviously have four or five characters who appear more than everyone else. And then you have some interesting guest spots and recurring characters. But Anthony Michael Hall is the big name in this. You know, he's from sort of that Brat Pack era of movies. You have Nicole DeBoer. I'm not 100% sure on that pronunciation. Chris Bruno, John L. Adams, David Ogden Steers, and then you have Bill Mondy, who's one of the other deputies who works with Walt Bannerman, who appears quite a bit. Sean Patrick Flannery is who plays Stilson. But then you have, you know, Frank Whaley in this for 7 episodes, Cara Buono in it for 6 episodes, Martin Donovan, who has been in a ton of stuff, popping in. And I think what they did was, for the time period, these were definitely recognizable TV people for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They even have Pop from Riverdale in this for 3 episodes, which I was like, this guy looks so familiar. And I couldn't place it. And I was like, oh, Alvin Sanders. Okay. He's the one who runs Pops in Riverdale. So it was fun making some of those connections. But really, you're banking on Anthony Michael Hall, Nicole DeBoer, and Chris Bruno, and even John L. Adams, I would say, to really drive this show forward.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it worked. I think that's a good, like, ensemble cast, and I think it makes really good use of them. I think it's really interesting, like, especially towards, like, the beginning of the show, how they're trying to style Anthony Michael Hall in a kind of Christopher Walken sort of way with, like, his haircut, and not necessarily in the way he speaks, but kind of in the way he moves, you know, where he's trying to evoke a Walken feel. And it's very interesting. And Anthony Michael Hall in general is already kind of a weirdo, and then you just kind of infuse him with more of this weirdo-ness, and it's just like, it's chef's kiss. It's amazing.
What did you think of the fact that Walt Bannerman was really an amalgamation of two characters? Because in the book, Sarah is married to a guy named Walt, but his last name is not Bannerman. So that kind of gives us more of this in-depth Stephen King connection with the Bannerman name being attached to Walt.
Yeah. I think it worked really well here, partly because I haven't read or watched like proper Dead Zone in like a long time. So I was able to just watch this and be like, oh, it's Walt. I remember Walt. I love Walt. Cause I watched this when I was like 12 and I was like, oh, Walt's great. I love Walt. But so I was able to just live with Walt, you know?
I was surprised by how big of a role Reverend Purdy played throughout this too, because I don't even remember if he was really a character of that caliber in the book or the movie, or if he even existed in those two things.
I can't say that I remember either. But it was interesting, like, as I was rewatching this and going, like, I know that, like, Reverend Purdy, like, self-destructs at some point, and I was like, all right, season 5, season 4, this is it. And then it just kept on not happening. I was like, I am confused. But they make really good use of, like, David Ogden Stiers throughout this that, like, I just don't really care that sometimes his character doesn't make any sense. Like, and he's just, like, doing things as, like, it was very, like, early 2000s catching on to, like, you know, big-time preachers or like, swindlers, kind of.
And it looks like he was a character created specifically for the show, because I'm looking on the Stephen King wiki now, and his appearances only come in the show, nothing mentioned in the book or movie about him. So he was an interesting character to add in because, like you said, they definitely go away from the source material. So to add in this quote-unquote important character who has this connection with Johnny's mom, but we never get anything in any of the source material about that, that's an interesting choice.
Right. And I think it's a good one because it infuses this religion and spirituality and like conversations of faith and this kind of counterpoint to, I think, Johnny's more agnostic views on like his visions and his view of the world that makes a really nice counterbalance to all of that.
Yeah, it adds a lot story-wise too, because you have a lot of tension between him and Johnny throughout. And I think that drives Johnny to look into things he might have not necessarily looked into just because he knew he had this personal connection with the Reverend and he could kind of leverage that to get information or get extra help when he needed it. Because even though Johnny isn't thrilled about the Reverend's connection to his mother and the fact that, you know, she donated all this money to Faith Heritage and he, you know, ran with Johnny's money pretty much from the trust. So you have all of that tension building up, but he's also a resource to Johnny. So it's kind of this push and pull that was interesting. Again, I won't say I love this show. I thought there were some interesting things about it, but there were also a lot of episodes I just didn't care for because they were like, okay, what does this have to do with anything? It felt like they either should have made it this narrative show, but then sometimes they would put in sort of these procedural type episodes where it was just a one-off and it was like they were done and it felt kind of weird and awkward, or he would be living in like a fantasy world for one episode. And I was just like, I don't really understand what is going on. But I will say I was fairly thankful that for the most part, these seasons were only 11 to 13 episodes long, with the exception of season 2, which was 19, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I'm like on the opposite side of it with you of like, I cared less about like the actual narrative stuff. Like, as I said, I don't care about Stilson in the slightest bit, but I think it's really good as like a, as you said, like a procedural show, as like this very episodic thing of Johnny gets a vision and off, you know, we're off to the races. I think that works really well. And like,
I feel like they tried to do too much of both. It's like they should have picked one or the other.
Right, right. And I think that's definitely fair. But like, I think season two is like the peak of the show. I think it is like the best of like what this show has to offer in terms of like storytelling.
There's some really good guest appearances as well. You have a Stephen King mention in one of the episodes, which obviously not an appearance, but you have Ally Sheedy, and it's kind of like this Breakfast Club reunion. You have Jane Lynch popping up, and she just plays her character so well. And then Frank Whaley shows up in the finale, I think, of season two, and that kind of gives you another narrative storyline to follow.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, there are like a lot of like good faces that just pop up and you'll go, oh, I know that person. I don't know how I know that person, but I know that person. And that's part of like watching a early 2000s show. But yeah, just like the episodicness of the show, I think, works well. And like there are a lot of episodes like in season two where I go, oh man, I remember that episode and it just freaking slaps. It's great.
I will also say the Jane Lynch episode had like a little nod to Firestarter.
Right. Yeah, I would. Yeah, definitely.
So I liked catching on to those things because obviously with 80 episodes, there's going to be a lot of little things. And because of how quickly I watched these episodes, I wasn't sure I was going to catch a bunch of them. But I think they do a good enough job of not bashing you over the head with Stephen King references.
Right. Yeah. And I'm sure there's a lot if like you're really looking for them.
Yeah, there's like a Red Rum mention. They go to Lewiston at one point. And it's not necessarily stuff that's crucial to the story. It's just like the creators were probably thinking, oh, hey, let's make a mention of these big movies and people will get these references or these bigger novels, whichever you prefer. And I think there were only a few weird choices. Like season four, the finale was a Christmas episode. I was like, that's a really
that's a bold weird choice.
Way to leave off a season.
Yeah, but then like on the other hand, it's great. Like, and I loved it. And part of that has to do with like I Love Alex.
Yeah, she's a fun guest character.
To kind of go along with what you were saying, like I think like some of the references in the show are like really key, because like they bring up the X-Files numerous times, and the X-Files is a show where like the episodic stuff is almost always better than like whatever mythology nonsense they're trying to pull at me, you know?
Okay.
And like,
I haven't watched it, so I'll take your word.
Like that really plays. And like, and just like me thinking about how like two of like the main producers on this show came from Star Trek DS9 and Voyager, where it's like, that is all about like just like being in a show, being on it week to week, and just like living with it. And like that, I feel really plays as well, you know? While also taking like this thing from Star Trek of like everything is kind of awful and terrible right now, especially on like DS9. But we still have like this hope and optimism to like make it through, and like the indomitable human spirit. And like I feel like that informs the show so much.
There was one part of the story that was driving me crazy for roughly two seasons, and it's the fact that throughout season two and three, Johnny had his cane, but he didn't seem to need it because he kept running everywhere, and then it took him until season four to ditch it in the river or whatever.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing about the show. It has rules until it decides that it doesn't need them anymore. Like, there's one episode where, like, this is kind of different, but the show says that like Johnny can just get visions by tapping his foot on something, but it completely ignores the fact that like anytime Johnny would make a step, he should also get a vision.
Yeah.
And the show just goes, don't worry about that, it's not important.
They do that when he starts just kind of waving his hand over stuff too and not actually touching anything until he figures out what he needs to touch.
Yeah,
I was like, what, when did this happen?
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of this article I saw on Screen Rant recently where it goes, here's how the powers of the Desmond work and why they don't make any goddamn sense.
Yeah.
Which is It's very true for this, I feel. I love the effect of like how his visions work, but they don't make any sense whatsoever.
I do want to say I really enjoyed everything that kind of happened inside the house, because you have this big giant house. He's living in it alone. Bruce is there a lot at the beginning, but then, you know, he starts dating this girl who we kind of only see once. It's like they're on the couch watching a movie together or something. Mm-hmm. And then he stops coming around, and then he ends up leaving. And I don't know if I just missed that part. And that's when he went to the horse trainer guy and was dating the daughter. And I was like, okay, so, you know, Johnny's in this house alone. And then with how season 5 ends, they end up having Sarah and JJ move into the house, and there's a new kid playing JJ in the final season. And I was like, I really love this house, but that kind of threw season 6 off for me quite a bit, because I was expecting the same kid, and I was like, oh, this is a totally different Johnny, and he doesn't even have blonde hair anymore. But I did like everything that went on in the house, because you kind of get this big haunted house feel, and then you're finding these like secret passageways in the house, and I thought that was really well done as far as like the setting goes for where Johnny's living.
Yeah, the house itself is a very good set, and while I don't think they explore it as much as I would like to, because like what it shows us is mainly like the basement, the main room, and that's it, like the entryway, and that's it. And so like we're told like this is a big huge house, but we only see like 3 shots from it,
and the kitchen. We see and quite a bit of the kitchen.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. I would have liked to see a little bit more of the house, but overall, it's a very good set.
Yeah, because like when he went into his dad's office, I think that got more interesting. And even though we didn't see it a ton, it helped drive that particular part of the story.
But to go back to what you were saying about like season 6 really quickly.
Yeah.
That is a weird season.
Yes.
It's almost a different show, because like we lose three people from the principal cast. We lose Walt, Reverend Purdy, and you just said his name a minute ago and I already forgot it.
Bruce.
We lose like those three characters, and it's so different. And then it just becomes like the Sarah and Johnny show, and it's like not the strongest part of the show.
Yeah, and even with the addition of Cara Buono in that season, she's only in about half of it.
Yeah, and they don't get to explore her as much as we would like to.
Yeah, I think they should have leaned a little harder on that storyline instead of the whole, you know, Walt or Johnny didn't tell Sarah that he had a vision about Walt and couldn't save him. And it's like, if he would have just told her that from the start, I feel like that season would have been much better, because then she finds out from the cop.
Yeah. Yeah. It's season 6 overall is maddening. And like the kid they bring in for JJ is not good.
Yeah.
He's not a very good actor, at least at that stage in his career.
And I mean, with child actors, I feel like it's very hit or miss, but I like the original JJ enough to the point where when they switched him out for the final season, for whatever reason that may be, I don't know what exactly happened there, but they replaced him with a kid who didn't even have the same hair color, didn't remotely look like Johnny, and he was just so annoying.
Yeah, and he didn't really look like JJ.
Yeah.
Like, JJ as we knew him didn't, like, bear any resemblance to this new kid. So, season 6 overall is just very maddening. There are some good episodes in there, but it's just very strange.
They did get a Shawshank mention in, which I appreciated.
That is good.
But apparently there was supposed to be a 7th season, too, so it just ended weird in general.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Do you know anything about that 7th season? I just kind of read that it was like, there was supposed to be one and it got canceled.
Yeah, that's what I've read too. It was going to get picked up by Sci-Fi or the Sci-Fi channel, and then it just didn't. Which was interesting, because like I'm pretty sure Sci-Fi had this show syndicated like as it aired. So like that would have worked, but it didn't happen for whatever reason.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't think I would have wanted a seventh season to watch, but yeah. I feel like they should have at least done, I don't know, one more episode just to wrap it up a little more nicely.
Right. Yeah. Like, that's the kind of thing I go back to, like, when I say, like, I don't care about Stilson. It's like, it doesn't amount to anything. Like, when we get to, like, the end of season six, and it's like, Stilson is still out Stilsoning, it's like, I don't, we haven't done anything with this, really.
Yeah, at some point, they try to make him a sympathetic character, but it just doesn't really work. And I was kind of annoyed that they tried to do that in the first place. I was like, no. I mean, one, it's hard to follow up Martin Sheen's performance.
Right.
And two, we don't want to like this guy.
No, yeah. Like, you can't tell me repeatedly, this guy is a sociopath who would destroy the world if he had the opportunity. And then go, well, actually, no, you don't. That's not okay.
Let's have him try to marry Sarah, because that makes sense.
Yeah, but I will say that Sean Patrick Flannery is very good as Stilson. Like, he is both.
Oh, yeah.
He's simultaneously very charming and a complete snake.
Like I said, it is hard to follow up a Martin Sheen performance of the same character, but he makes it his own.
Yeah.
And he does it well enough to the point where you know exactly how you're supposed to feel about this character at all times.
Mm-hmm. Although I will say, like, the final episode of the series, where it's revealed that, like, Stilson had Johnny's dad the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
That is just a weird retcon, and B, like...
And that he thinks Stilson is his son, not Johnny.
Yeah, well, and it also does, like, the thing of, like, why did we spend all the time of Stilson going, this dude's insane, if he knew, A, that, like, Johnny's dad had visions, and B, like... knew that visions were a thing, you know? Like, why do that entire plot line? It doesn't really track. It's overall just very strange.
Yeah, I was like, okay, this season six kind of crashed and burned very hard. But since you like this show more than I did, why don't you give me some of your highlights?
A lot of my highlights come from, like, the second season, because, like, that season is just so strong, in my opinion.
Okay.
Like, and I think the show does this interesting thing, and I think it'll probably be reflected in, like, some episodes that, like, I go back to and, like, mention here, where, like, it takes Johnny's powers and just kind of twists them in an interesting way of, like, all right, we have a guy that can have visions. What if this happened to him? You know? So, like, the episode of Johnny getting a blood transfusion and being able to have, like, six people's visions in his head for, like, weeks.
Yeah.
I thought it was a good episode. I thought it was a really good episode. And it was this interesting twist on, like, his powers and, like, how things would affect them. And, like, or, like, the episode you mentioned with Jane Lynch and the hurricane. And, like, what if Johnny... just, like, felt a raindrop and was just could see, like, the vortex, you know, and, like, how that moves and how that works. This is a weird highlight, but the plague episode,
yeah,
was deeply uncomfortable.
you're talking about the one at the school where they were having, like, the science fair and all the kids started getting sick, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Perhaps not the most responsible episode for me to have watched during this time. Kind of wish I hadn't. In a certain way, because it's very haunting. They even say the word coronavirus at one point, and they mention, like, chloroquine, I think.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, this is too much. This is too much. I don't like this. It's very good, but I don't like this at all. With a guest appearance from Stephen Tobolowsky, which is wild. Love it. Yeah. While I was watching that, I was thinking, like, man, I'm really glad me and Deanna did that stand episode when we did, because...
And not now.
not even, like, a month later, because, like, that would have been...
Well, here's the thing. The new version of The Stand will be out in December.
Yay. Yes.
So that'll be a fun thing to watch. Witch at the end of 2020.
Love a good story about a plague.
What timing?
But I think like the season one episode where Johnny goes on a jury, and they're basically doing 12 Angry Men, but make it a psychic.
Oh yeah.
I thought that was really good. And it's just really well performed in that episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's just a lot of these episodes that I really enjoy. And like I said, I watched this as it aired. So like I have like these really fond memories of season two, and I just rewatch and go, oh, I remember that. That was a great episode. That's a great episode.
I think with the jury episode, because it put him in a confined space with people who didn't necessarily believe in what he was able to do, the tension rose so much in that episode in comparison to him just sort of being out and touching things. And, you know, he was stuck in this one place. And when you have an episode that is largely taking place in one setting, I feel like that can be very hard to pull off. But they did it well because they had enough people in there to bounce off of Johnny.
There are so many like different personalities going on through there, and like differing motivations and differing kind of ideologies. And the episode makes like the really good decision of like the opposing view, the main like opposing views during the trial and in the jury room are like people of color against like this young black man who's on trial. So it's not like this chorus of white people just going like, we should find him guilty. Like, it somewhat definitely sidesteps that and like the point of views it gives certain people.
Yeah, I think there were some episodes that worked really, really well, and then some I just didn't care for. So that's why this kind of just ended up being fine for me overall. And it's definitely a lot. I was surprised that this went on for 6 seasons. To me, it kind of suffered the same way Dexter did.
Right, yeah.
Like, if this had been 3 seasons, maybe, and they had wrapped everything up with Stilson sooner, because when I saw he was only in 19 episodes, I thought maybe that was going to be the season 2 storyline, because the season was 19 episodes, but then they introduced him in the finale for season 1, and I was like, oh, okay, maybe I'm wrong, and then they just dragged it out so much. He probably could have been in half the number of episodes, and they could have cut out, like, almost a whole season or 2 or 3. If we want to like get rid of season 6 altogether.
Yeah. Well, it definitely is a show that like gets worse as it goes along. Like, I feel like in season 5, you can kind of feel the strain of it.
Well, yeah, because I didn't understand why he could save literally everyone except for Walt.
Right. Yeah.
That made no sense to me. It's like you have saved every other person for the most part. I think there were maybe 1 or 2 people aside from Walt he didn't save. There was like a girl who ended up dead because he couldn't piece together his vision the right way. And I think it was that episode with the twins and they did the fake death and then she really ended up dead.
Yeah.
That sounds about right. I'm not 100% confident in that, but I know there was 1 or 2 times where he just couldn't save someone, but he saved Bruce like 3 or 4 times or something in one episode when they were trapped on the highway. And it's just like, okay, you saw this coming and you definitely did not stop it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the problem with season 6 overall. Like it starts out on the wrong foot and then just kind of keeps on going.
And I guess technically Malcolm Janis died that episode too.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
not that he was a person Johnny would have wanted to save, but I feel like at that point too, it's like, did he even want to save the Reverend?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Which, I mean, I know technically Walt does that, but he had his vision change at one point to where it was Purdy who died, not Walt. And it's like, what happened?
Yeah. One episode I wanted to bring up from season 2. which was the episode where Johnny gets kidnapped by like the three women.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is a bad episode. It's okay in some regards, but like, especially like the note that episode leaves out on of, it's very transphobic. It's just extremely transphobic. And I didn't like it at all. Like, I know we didn't have the greatest like understanding of like trans people in like the early 2000s, but like, it's still very, very bad. Like, we end the episode dead naming like this woman. And it's like, this is not great.
Yeah, I thought that episode was a little confusing too, because they go back to this house and she wants Johnny to figure something out, but it seems like she already knows the answer.
Yeah, well, it's doing this trope of a like deep latent psychosis, and also the trans person is mentally ill, which is just like, it's like a, it's a very like toxic and like harmful trope that like trans people are just kind of off their rocker, you know?
Right.
And this plays in that arena. And then like, as I said, to just like end it with like, cause like she is ostensibly trans at the end, as we understand her at the end of the episode. And then they dead name her. And it's just like, this is bad. This is not good. I don't know why you would choose to do this.
It makes me wonder if they thought they were being progressive at the time and it wasn't, and aged extremely poorly.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely agree with that. Cause like, it started out as like a lesbian relationship and I was like, okay, this is different. And then it morphed into still a lesbian relationship, but one of the women was trans, and it's like, okay, that's interesting. But then just executes it horribly. And just bungles it.
Well, yeah, because the other person in the relationship didn't know that either, from what we gather.
Yeah, so it's like, it's trying to get points off of literally nothing. And in some cases, it's less than nothing, you know?
Yeah, that was definitely not a great episode. Again, a great setting with the house, but not a great story at all.
Yeah, but I think like that was like the main episode where I went, oh, I don't like this. Like, of the ones, and I think I watched about like 20 to 30 of these episodes again. It's like, oh, I don't like this.
Yeah, it's definitely bottom of the list if I were to rank some of the episodes. There are certain ones that I was just like, no.
Yeah.
I'm having none of this.
It's going to be a no for me.
Yeah. Well, are there any other episodes you want to mention? I know with 80 episodes, there's a lot, but I feel like as far as the show as a whole goes, it's a lot of the same thing over and over again. So there's not like too terribly much to talk about as far as like diversity in the story.
Right. Well, like there's the episode on the plane, which I think is really well done.
Yeah.
And then like Alex's final episode in season 6, because like I just really like Alex. And like,
that's the big pink spoon one, right?
Yeah, the big pink spoon. And Alex is just, she's a very charming character, and the actress who plays her is very, very good.
Yeah.
So, like, she's a very welcome presence, and I kind of wish she was in more of the show, even though I know it would be weird to have, like, two psychics on at the same time who have vaguely the same kind of power, sort of. Although Alex is, like, definitely a thing of, like, oh, she's a woman, so like her powers are more emotional than Johnny's, which is more rooted in objects and things. It's like, okay.
Here we go.
Okay. But despite that, Alex is just really great. And the early season 2 episodes where with the cave-in, cave-in in the mine, and Walt maybe being Grim Reapered, unclear, which I thought was really great and kind of dives into the weird relationship that like Walt, Sarah, and Johnny all have.
Yeah.
And also that Chris Bruno is just really good at like the lines they give him, because like when they give them to Anthony Michael Hall, they're just weird.
Yeah.
Because like they recreate like a lot of that stuff, and it's just like, oh, this is, I get that Anthony Michael Hall is a weirdo, but this is weird. So, like, it is, like, a good testament to, like, Chris Bruno's way of, like, just delivering lines, you know?
Totally.
So I think those are like the big ones that come to mind.
Yeah, I think so too. And obviously there's a lot of episodes, so I don't know if I would necessarily recommend that everyone goes and watches this, but it's not available on Amazon Prime anymore, I don't think. I had to watch it through like Tubi or something, and it had oddly placed ads, and I was like, oh my God, this viewing experience is horrible. But, you know, if it ends up back on Amazon or Hulu or something, I would suggest at least checking out the first two seasons.
Yeah. It's on IMDb TV.
Also that.
Which is a perfectly good way of watching it, but also has ads. And as you said, weirdly placed ads, but works. It's very accessible.
Yeah, and if you're only doing the first two seasons instead of all six, you're not going to spend nearly as much time watching it as I did.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts, Drew?
Just, I really enjoyed going back to rewatching this because I don't think I have watched this in a substantial way since I was 13 or so.
Okay.
I don't need to say how many years ago that was, actually. But it was very enjoyable. I had a really good time with it. And it just kind of reminded me why I like this show so much and definitely why I watched it as at that age.
Well, I'm glad it sounds like you definitely enjoyed it more than I did and you got to revisit at least some of it for this episode.
Yeah, indeed.
So thank you for doing that. And I personally am glad that I do not need to watch all 80 episodes again if I don't want to.
Well, that's good.
All right, that does it for this episode of Chat Cemetery. You can support the podcast on Patreon for $1 a month. You'll get a thank you on the show. For $2 a month, I will send you a Chat Cemetery sticker. And if you want to follow us on social media, you can do so at Chat Cemetery on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You could also rate and review the show. That's a huge help. And as always, thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.